everybody, and welcome back to the Stroh's Bros Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Perez, and joining me today are the newest bros of the Stroh's Bros, Alex Sandoval and Brian Hamilton. Boys, happy to have you on here to make your Stroh's Bros Podcast debut. On deck today, we've got the Carlos Peña talk. We're going to talk about potential trade bait, and we're also going to talk about a whole bunch of other things coming up here on the Stroh's Bros Podcast. You keep it locked in here, and we're going to get right into it after this.
There it is! The Astros have won the Central Division title.
It's gone! It's gone! It's gone!
Line drive right center field. That's number 3,000.
One away to say goodbye.
And now, you're listening to the Stroh's Bros.
What if all you understand? All right, guys, so let's get right into it. Let's talk about Carlos Peña. What do you guys think about Carlos?
Man, look, Richard, I was really hard on Carlos at the beginning of the year. I thought he was – well, I still think we could have got other players that might have been a little bit more, provided more offense, done a little bit more for the team. But Carlos Peña, I've come to really appreciate the guy because the guy gets on base. I think I looked up a baseball reference today, and I think since April 29th, I want to say, his on-base percentage is I think, 389, which is like really good. He has no power, so I've been advocating on Twitter that he should bat second, which I think he should. I think he's been pretty decently. He's been mediocre in the field, which I thought is a little underwhelming, but has no power, but he's getting on base. His team sorely lacks that. I've been okay with Carlos Peña. I think we can ride with him a little bit longer.
Yeah, I like Carlos Peña as well. I like the signing for him because obviously he was signed, you know, hoping that he would play well and then we could flip him at the deadline for something. You know, he's going to still be flipped at the deadline most likely unless he suffers an injury because, like Alex said, he's getting on base. He's providing the occasional pop. He's still doing what he was signed to do. He plays good defense. The thing about – I don't know about batting him second. I wouldn't be against it, but I do like the top two right now being Grossman and Altuve. But, I mean, I wouldn't be against him batting in the two-hole. That's no problem at all. But he clearly won't be here past July 31st anyway. So he needs to be getting the majority of his at-bats in whatever position in the lineup will help his numbers and help the team.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I was thinking about, you know, as Alex said, to put him in at second or, you know, anywhere at the top. I think that it would be good to have him prioritize his at-bats in the batting order. And I think it'd be good seeing as he gets on base, as he said, quite a good time. I think it'd be good. It build on for the other guys to sort of move him around. I think I'm not too sure. I doubt there's a saber metric to back this claim up, but I think if you have somebody on base and there's between one to no outs, I think that'd be a lot better for the guys under him. So maybe having him lead off or second would be a lot better than having him, you know, lower half of the batting order. So I think moving him up could only do good. I don't know if it'd be detrimental to the other guys, but I think it'd help him out a lot more than it would do harm.
And you know, I think I agree with that. And I think also the way that his power has decreased, leaving him in the sixth hole does very little. He does strike out a ton still, not as much as I thought he would, but he still strikes out a ton. So batting Carter and then Peña back-to-back, man, strikeouts are really bad with those two. So I would kind of switch them around, separate them a little bit. I know Porter came out today, I think, and he said that he's going to keep the lineup as is for a while. And I guess he's playing the if it's not broke, don't fix it strategy in a way. But I agree with you. I think Peña needs to be up in the order. It's just, he does very little for me down at the sixth hole. I think he's just better at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that having him, I think it might not change his strikeout numbers, but it certainly affect the flow of the game to have him away from Carter. Because if you think about it, if Carter and Peña start off an inning, odds are better than not that you're going to get two good outs from Carlos Peña and Chris Carter back to back. So that kind of flushes that inning down the drain. So if you were to separate these two guys, I think it'd be a lot better for them and for Carter as well, because if it could only do good to have him do better, it'll only increase his, how would you say, his stock for come July 31st on the trade deadline. So I think it'd behoove the Astros and Bo Porter to move him up and to sort of inflate his numbers, as it were.
Yeah, no, that's completely okay with me as well, just to get him those the stats up. I mean, if it's gonna make another team see him as a more attractive player and may want to give up something a little bit more than what they would, because, I mean, we're all in agreement that he's going to be traded, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
I was going to bring that up after you made your point, Bryant. I'm actually getting to the point where I'm not so sure. And the only reason I'm not so sure, and I'll let you get to your point in a second, is that I remember earlier this week Jeff Luhnow was mentioned talking about Jonathan Singleton, and it really struck me as if he made it seem like we're not going to see Jonathan Singleton probably until September. If that's the case, I mean, they could just bring up Brett Wallace, who's playing well at AAA. But I'm wondering if they're not going to just hold on to Pena, figuring what there might not get enough value in return and just stick him at first or DH or whatever the whole rest of the year. So I'm not exactly sure anymore, but there's still the odds are they will move him.
Well, I mean, they're not just going to give him away. You know, I mean, like, if they can't get anything for him that's, you know, at least worth him not being here for the last 2 or 3 months of the season, then he'll stay here. But even if they move him, though, what they'll end up doing is just bringing up Brett Wallace, like you said. And if Wallace struggles again, by that point, Singleton will have had at bats down there. They can always just demote Brett Wallace probably for the final time and then bring up Singleton. But I just can't see Carlos Pena still on the Astros past the deadline unless, for whatever reason, he suffers an injury or just goes in a catastrophic slump.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I was going to mention, as Alex said, Brett Wallace down at AAA. I've mentioned it before that I think Brett Wallace might be done. But then again, thinking about this situation, I think he may get one last shot to coincide, you know, is his last hurrah at the major league level if he can't cut it. And I think that'll be ample time because if he's cut, you know, maybe, say in the 11th hour on the trading deadline, it'll be going into August where Brett Wallace will have that entire month almost to himself at the at first base. And should he not cut it, I think that will be according to schedule to have John Singleton come up in September.
Okay, and yeah, even whenever he comes up, you see, he came up last year and he just raked at the end of the year. I mean, well, maybe raked is too strong of a word. He did play well, though, towards the end of the year after he was called up, but then we start him on the big league team this year and he was just terrible. I mean, he was worse than worse. So even if Wallace comes up and he starts playing well, I don't even know how much stock I would put into that because at this point, I mean, I was a huge fan of that trade whenever we got Anthony Goes and flipped him for Brett Wallace. I loved the deal. At the time, it looked like Berkman just wasn't going to have it anymore. And then we shipped him out, and we had nothing in the minor leagues in terms of a legit first baseman to replace Berkman. So I loved getting Brett Wallace, but he has just underwhelmed so much. Alex and I have talked about this in the past. In my opinion, and you know, in my lifetime, basically, and I'm 27, he's the most disappointing Astros prospect I've ever seen.
Oh, it's killed me. I mean, I think Brian and I both, when that trade was made, I don't think neither of us, with the Roy Oswalt deal, I don't think neither of us were very happy with the deal. I don't think we were ecstatic, but we did think Brett Wallace was going to be a major league caliber first baseman, and I obviously hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping to just get, like, maybe just Lyle Overbay out of it, you know? Not the actual player, but, like, a player like that. Like, you know, if Wallace could turn into someone like that, that would have been good. But he's just been so terrible. I don't know what it is. He can't hit the inside pitch. I don't care how many times you send him down. If he's hitting it down there, he clearly cannot hit it up here. It's just – it's bad. It's I don't know what the deal is with him. But I just – I don't see him having a future with the Astros. He may be up at some point later this season. In fact, he will be up at some point later this season, even if it's just a September call-up. But I don't see him in the Astros organization next year.
I still remember when we first traded for him. You know, you trade for a new player, and you automatically have daydreams and fantasies about what they could become eventually. And I remember telling somebody, you know, Brett Wallace, he's not a home run hitter, but he kind of reminds me of John Olerud. I was wrong.
Yeah.
And to further elaborate on that, I think there is a reason why Brett Wallace was traded from so many teams before he even got a at bat at the major league level. So I think teams probably saw something in him that we gave him a chance, and they saw this forecoming. And I think that was probably one of the main reasons why he was traded from so many organizations and seen as expendable to their organization. And I think that we shot this down many times before, and I'm not the only one who subscribes to this idea, but I think this reason why Brett Wallace being a quadruple A type player is the reason why he was bounced around from so many organizations. And I think we're starting to see it come. We're starting to see what the other team saw then right now.
That's got to be the worst, quadruple A player. I hate those terms. It's so depressing.
It's because we've had so many, but I think that fits with Wallace. And I'll tell you this, whenever that deal happened, it was Anthony Gose, J-Hap, and Jonathan Villar for Oswalt. And I remember looking at it thinking, why did we get another outfielder? And then we flipped Gose for Wallace. And in fact, what I meant was, why did we get the outfielder instead of Jonathan Singleton? Because we clearly needed a first baseman at the time. And at that point, Singleton wasn't an Astro yet. We didn't get him until the Pence deal. But I remember everyone was saying, what is Toronto doing? They're trading a legit 25 home run guy for a toolsy outfielder that's in low A. I mean, all the scouts were saying it. But the only scout who said that it was a good deal for Toronto was Kevin Goldstein, who is now with the Astros. And I remember him saying that Wallace is one of the most overrated prospects he's ever seen that gets blown up by the other scouts and other baseball websites. And I remembered that, and I remember thinking, oh God, I hope he's wrong. He was right.
Yeah, unfortunately. Ugh. And Ghost, Ghost has a lot of tools, and I think he did really well last year at AAA. This year, he's really been struggling. I mean, his numbers aren't pretty. They just called him up, so we'll see if maybe this is his time. But, I mean, he may turn out to be nothing anyway. To be perfectly honest, Jonathan Villar may end up still being the best guy in the deal for all parties involved, because Roy Oswalt, he did some stuff for the Phillies, but really didn't live up to the potential with them either. So I'm crossing my fingers for Jonathan Villar to become the next Rafael Furcal. But that is a hopefully not too much of a daydream. What do you think, Richard?
I going with Gose on that. I'm excited to see what he's gonna do. I think he really can do wrong in Toronto. I think Toronto situation is similar to ours. So, but in all reality, as you said, VR is really going to be the main component of that. And when it comes to a prospect, when you're trading for prospects and stuff like that, you really can never be 100% sure. And this just one time we kind of missed out on a on that. And to give it another comparison, if you look at the Asher Wojciechowski trade, people thought Asher was done, and he was kind of lost what he had, as his velocity was down after 2011, and they sent him down to high A of Dunedin, Toronto did. And if you fast forward almost as if he got, as soon as he got to Corpus Christi, he seemed to have gotten it back and had his velocity back up. So it's really just one of those things where you can't really predict what's going to happen, and that's what's just so great about this game of baseball.
Pretty much.
Yeah, the thing about Asher, I read once, whenever he was traded over here and he started doing really well at Corpus, I can't remember who said it or where I read it, but basically Toronto was having him, they were tinkering with his throwing motion, like with his delivery, with his arm release. And once he came back over here and he told the coaches about it, they said, no, don't do that anymore. Go back to what makes you feel comfortable. And he went back to it, and he's just been playing. He's had a sub-3 ERA ever since he's been in the Astros organization. So that looks – and we got him for J-Hap, who was part of the Oswalt deal. So, that could end up being really, really good for us.
Yeah, I think – and we discussed this maybe two podcasts ago. And about Asher Wojciechowski, and I think that was one of the big things that we had him do what he felt comfortable with. And I think that entire Blue Jays trade was, I think Asher Wojciechowski may have been the best part of that. But we're gonna go ahead and take a stop right here at the halfway point. We'll be right back. We've got a whole lot more coming up. We're going to talk about Reed Ryan and Larry Durker coming back. So you guys keep it locked in here on the Stros Brothers. We'll be right back.
Word life. This is basic thugonomics. This is basic thugonomics. Word life. I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me. Word life. This is basic thugonomics. Word life. I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me.
We are back with the second half of the Stros Bros podcast. All right, so let's get right into this. We're going to talk about Reed Ryan being moved in as the president and CEO of the Houston Astros. Guys, what do you think about this move?
Oh, I think it's a great move. He comes from a great baseball family. His dad, obviously Nolan Ryan, baseball legend, Texas legend. Reed Ryan was a bat boy for the Astros back in the 80s when his dad played for us, and he slowly worked his way up through the minor league system in the front office ranks. He was the president of the AA Corpus Christi Hooks and the AAA Round Rock Express, which is a Rangers affiliate right now. I love the move. Apparently, and I didn't know this or anything, but apparently George Postolos was just bad at his job, I guess. I mean, I didn't – none of us are privy to any of the specific information, but, you know, him and Durker got into it, and now Durker's been brought back into the fold. And, you know, the whole Comcast issue, and we're hearing that that may get rectified pretty soon as well. So it sounds like we got somebody in there doing that job that cares about the Astros, cares about the fans, cares about the ballpark experience. Not saying Postolos didn't care, but he sure didn't show it. So I think it's a great move.
You know, and I don't even necessarily think he didn't show it. I have a feeling it was more about philosophy to me. And everything I heard, I don't know if you guys follow, I think you guys do follow Jose De Ortiz, I think. Jesus De Ortiz.
Yeah, Ortiz Kicks.
Ortiz Kicks. He's really good, and he nailed the story once that whole Wives Gala thing broke. And I had a feeling that there wasn't a coincidence. Postolos leaving, then that story breaking. It just seemed to me that the philosophy for Postolos was, we're going to clean house. I don't know who Larry Durker is. I don't know who, you know, Bagwell is. I'm going to just clean house, bring in my own people, and we're going to start over. And it pissed people off, apparently, because when Reed Ryan got hired, everybody was – oh, actually, when Postolos got fired, a lot of the stories were everybody was miserable there. They were miserable, and they were unhappy, and they were happy as hell that, you know, Postolos got taken out. So I think it's a philosophy thing. I think it just didn't work. And then someone brought this up to me, and it made sense. Postolos was never meant to be a president of a company. He was meant to help Jim Crane get a company. And then he was supposed to quietly, you know, disappear. Well, that wasn't happening. And I guess we saw why that wasn't supposed to happen. He did a pretty bad job at it, it looks like, at least. And Reed Ryan's done a great job so far. In 2 days, he's already hired Larry Durker, and he's about to hire, I think, who else was he talking to? The Bagwell, I think, he's also talking to, bringing back. He's done a great job so far.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on all of that. But I think, it, as Brian alluded to earlier, I think Postolos went in there with the mentality that he doesn't know anybody, and he doesn't know anybody anything in that organization. So really, as much as we had a sentimental claim and a value and just sentiment to everybody involved in the Astros organization, who had certainly a lengthy period, a lengthy time with the Astros up until that point, and it really broke a lot of people's hearts. And what really made me upset was everybody, you know, went after Jim Crane about this, and they bashed Jim Crane, and they, you know, threw him under the proverbial bus about it. And I hope people can see that it wasn't his fault. It was Postolos, and Jim Crane really had nothing to do with it, because it was all really mainly Postolos' calls to do all of that stuff. So I hope people can realize that, and as Ortiz did, he did an amazing job with all the stories. And I hope people can, you know, sort of mend the bridges that they burned while throwing rocks at Crane. So I really think this could be nothing but good for the Astros. And with moving forward, especially with the Durker deal, that fixes a whole lot of PR faults that Pistolo's had, and I think it's really a lot of good, because I remember a lot of people were really upset about the whole Durker thing, how he left and basically walked away, as well as Jim Deshays. So I think this is just one step towards the direction of getting to where we once were and making everything right again, as it were.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree as well. The only I don't know that he's going to be talking to Bagwell, Alex. Did you read that? Because
I read something about Bagwell. I could be confusing it, to be honest. He mentioned they were going to reach out to Durker and then reach out to someone else. And I have to apologize. It eludes me right now. But they were going to talk to somebody else that was big in the company, a legend, you could say, about bringing him in. But again, I thought it was Bagwell. It might not be. I'm not positive.
The only reason I'm saying that is I think Bagwell has some personal demons he's exercising right now. I don't want to get too much into it, but, you know, I don't know that he'll be coming back. But as far as what you were saying, Richard, about Jim Crane, I think that the one thing this shows is that Jim Crane is the anti-Drayton McClain, because what he did was he hired guys and let them do their job. He hired Pistolos and let him do his job. Now he found out that he was just really terrible at his job. You know what I mean? So it's like, it wasn't Jim Crane that did anything wrong here. Although the people that were blaming Crane for everything were blaming him for the Durker fiasco. It turns out it was George Pistolos. So yeah, I mean, I think both of you guys are right on that.
And I will say this, and quickly I'll touch on the Wives Gala thing. Cause that day when it came out, I was confused. I'm like, whoa. I didn't think it was as bad as people made it out to be, but I was like, wow, this is a very cold and somewhat calculated move, and this is not the time to be making those type of moves. And then when the story broke and we found out, hey, they told them in January, they told so-and-so, emails were exchanged and everything, and it became fairly obvious that this was more of a Pistolos-type move than a Crane move. I was hoping Crane would get, like I think, Richard, you mentioned earlier, people would get off his back about the whole issue. But I also think Crane is a bad guy. I know we all like wrestling, so I'll use the wrestling terminology. Crane is the heel. He is going to be the heel. I think it will take a very long time for people to realize that the guy is not all bad and that he does have good intentions here or there. But we'll see on that, I guess. You guys go ahead.
Yeah, and rightfully so for Jim Crane. I think it wasn't really his fault, and as Brian said, he's the anti Drayton McClain. And one of my biggest beefs with McClain was that he was kind of like Jerry Jones for the Cowboys. He was he liked to intermingle. He's like Al Davis. He always had to have his hands in the pot where they don't belong. You know, he would interfere with people doing their job. And I really think it only shows good that Jim Crane knows that he's got to let people do their job. And so I'm really happy about that. And as the whole PR move, the Wives Gala, that thing, everybody was from Climbing Taos Hill and everybody else who just had a real big hissy fit about it. I'm glad I was able to sit back and say, you know, we don't know this whole story, rather than giving a really bad knee-jerk reaction and bashing people about, you know, who's to blame for this. I think it's a testament, and if you did this as well, I think any Astros fans who did this should take, you know, give themselves a pat on the back for just being able to see through what everybody wants to be, you know, anti-Jim Crane and bashing him for really that something wasn't his responsibility. So I think it's a good thing that that people let it play out as it went, and I hope people feel really stupid for saying this is all Crane's fault in regards to the Wives Gala.
Yeah, and the whole blackout situation where we're not going to do this and we're not going to do that and we may not be back after this happens and everyone's back and no one has said anything. And then come to find out, Jim Crane told him all about this situation, I think back in December. That was, what, 6 months ago? So it just happened to get leaked last week that it was happening. But he gave him a six-month notice on it. So it's not like it's a big – I mean, I don't know. I think you're right, Richard. It's just, you know.
And, you know, everybody has their opinion, and they can do what they want to do with their websites. And this is not, hey, you know, do what you want to do. However, I will say this. I was surprised that everybody didn't learn their lesson a few weeks ago when Peter Gammons went out and called out Jim Crane on something about employee benefits, that he was taking them away and he was leading the charge. And yeah, that was pretty bad. And I was like, whoa, that's horrible. A day later, Peter Gammons basically has to apologize to Jim Crane on Twitter because he screwed up. And he broke the cardinal rule of reporting and not checking your sources. And so I thought it would be a little bit more of, let's see if this what happens. But now everybody has jumped on the wagon and they went and took their pitchforks and their torches and tried to take out Frankenstein, and ended up being a bad move.
Yeah, I haven't heard about, what was this Peter Gammons thing? This is the first time I've heard of it.
Oh, about 2 weeks back, Brian. I think it was 2 weeks, right? Yeah, Peter Gammons just went out and just destroyed Jim Crane, because apparently there's a group of owners that want to eliminate employee benefits. They didn't go in depth of what employees, I'm sure not the players, but probably front office executives and so forth, which is really bad. I mean, no company should ever eliminate employee benefits, but they apparently some people are doing that, and he used Jim Crane as one of the people spearheading that argument, which made Crane look really bad. And of course, the pitchforks and the torches went out. The next day, he literally had to come back and say, oops, I screwed up. It wasn't Jim Crane. That apparently a number of people came out and told him, slow down, Peter Gammons. Jim Crane is quite the opposite. Not that guy. He's doing everything he can. He's got a great leadership team together. So that's not the problem. So he basically had to apologize to Jim Crane for
what was basically slandering
something that was completely false.
Yeah.
Exactly.
To elaborate further on that, I know, do you guys follow Cron comments on Twitter?
No, it's annoying.
I try not to. They're weird people. I don't
know. Just for the hell of it, I mean, I just watch it just because it really goes to show the stupidity of some of the people in our fan base. And here's my biggest bone to pick with Astros fans. People who quote unquote boycott the Astros this year just because Jim Crane was playing a round of golf with President Obama at this year during spring training. Religion, political affiliation aside, I think that's one of the stupidest reasons you could ever choose not to be a fan or boycott any sort of business whatsoever just because of their political affiliations regardless. Whatever he chooses to vote for, what he views his views, it's one of those things where you're not supposed to talk about politics or religion out in the open. And I think it really makes Astros fans and Texans, as a matter of fact, look bad that people are up in arms just because he played a round of golf with another human being.
Yeah, and look, I'm a Republican, but if Barack Obama wants to play golf with me, you bet your ass I'm going to be playing golf with him.
Absolutely.
That would just be awesome.
Absolutely. And I think it's just regardless of anything like that, it's just a round of golf. And people, if you are ever outraged by that, I'm sorry. You need to really check yourself as far as that goes. So that's just one last thing as far as the anti-Crane thing that we've been on. And going back to Reed Ryan. Reed Ryan is one of the best guys I think that could have happened to this organization. And so I hope that it can only ensure that the Astros will have close ties with Ryan Sanders Baseball, the owners of the Round Rock Express and the Corpus Christi Hooks. So that really just put me at ease and give me a big smile that Corpus and hopefully Round Rock will come back and be Houston Astros affiliates.
Yeah, I think eventually, I have a feeling Round Rock will be an Astro affiliate again. I do think they're going to explore the Woodlands over there by your neck of the woods, Brian. Maybe a single-A team. Lancaster, from all indications, is a very nice organization, nice park, a nice team. But I don't like the fact that these numbers are so skewed because of where they play. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up moving that single-A team to the Woodlands as a possible single-A franchise.
Yeah, but the thing about that, you have to find a place that you could put a team somewhere. Now, as far as Advanced Day goes for the California League, that is Lancaster, it's really just a lot of loops to jump through because you have to find somebody who's going to sell a team. You have to find a market. You have to go through the city to get a stadium built. You have to go through a whole bunch of loops. And really the main thing blocking it is, you know, I really don't want to be against this, but the idea, there's really nowhere to put another team that would be in the Woodlands area, because the only Advanced A levels that you would have would be California League, Florida State League, and the Carolina League. So really, those are really not in the general vicinity for the Woodlands or Texas in general. So I really think that kind of throws it out of the equation. But you never know what could happen, you know, with baseball going forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I wanted to bring up something, guys. I know the trade deadline is a couple of months away, but and what are you guys thinking so far? What are you guys thinking about who might be the first Astro to be taken off the board?
I'm going to let Brian handle this one first.
Yeah, the first one that's going to go off the board, I don't have any idea because, like last year, there were several of them that got traded all within a 2-month time period. And we started early on that one. Like Carlos Lee got dealt on July 4th. But the most likely to get traded is Bud Norris. But I think that we may see another player that may not have as much value but could be easier to move because there won't be as much demand traded off. Like one guy that no one really talks about that I think could possibly be traded who is playing every day right now is JD Martinez. And I'm not saying he will be, but I think it's a legit possibility, especially considering that Justin Maxwell's on the DL. He's going to need a spot to come back to, although most likely he'll just take over in right field, and I don't know what they'll do with Paredes. But if I were to put like a guess on who I think will be the first one dealt, I'll say Bud Norris. But that's only because I think he's almost certain to be dealt by July 31st. I mean, Carlos Pena's in there as well, JD Martinez, possibly Jose Veras. We got quite a few guys who could be traded.
Absolutely. And you also have to take into account the market or the demand, the economy of Major League Baseball right now, as far as players are concerned, not anything financial. But if you look at the starting pitching right now is huge demand. There's a huge demand for starting pitching right now. And as you mentioned, Bud Norris. But I think teams will look at Bud Norris as a lower rung for, you know, as an acquisition. And I think Lucas Harrell might I'm not saying he'll be traded before or after, because I don't think that necessarily defines as good a player who a good player is. I think Lucas Harrell will yield a higher, he has more value to him than Bud Norris would, because I think Lucas Harrell is more solid of a, you know, he's more reliable, he's more sturdy than Bud Norris, who can be shaky and almost unreliable to a certain extent. So I think you will see Lucas Harrell will have a bigger yield as far as quality of, you know, the trade piece we get in return.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I know that San Francisco lost a key starter today, Vogelson. I don't know if you guys heard, he broke his hand punching a wall, I think that's what I read.
Was that how he broke it?
No, it was during the game. I saw the replay on it. He got hit with the pitch or it fouled off of his wrist or something to that effect, but he was batting whenever it happened.
Oh, okay. I heard something about he hit a wall or something, or punched a wall. My bad. Apologies. But he broke his hand, so that's another team. Dodgers are desperately in need of a starter. Angels need a starter. I think a lot of starting pit teams are going to need starting pitchings, especially those teams like the Angels and Dodgers who really invested a lot of money into this season. They're going to need a team. They're going to need a starting pitching. So I think they're going to try to go all out for Bud Norris. He could be the most affordable and attainable guy.
The Angels, you could write them off. Dude, their minor league system is worse than ours was 4 years ago. It's so terrible. They have one player in it that I would take. But even then, you know, it's just – it's not really – I just don't see them making a play for anybody, any big-name type players. I think if they make a deal for a starter, it won't be even anybody of Bud Norris' stature. Bud Norris isn't even that great.
So Brian, what if – and Richard, what if the Angels came to you and they said, we'll trade you – we would have nobody in the minor leagues worth a damn. But let's say, how about we trade you Peter Borges and pick one of their top prospects, whoever that may be. Peter Borges, a top prospect for Bud Norris. Is that a yes or no?
Peter Borges for Bud Norris, straight up.
No, not straight up. Add a prospect. I mean, their top prospects would probably still be in our 10 to 20 range for us. But even so, a prospect with some potential, and Peter Borges for Bud Norris.
I mean, if that was the only deal on the table and the deadline clock is ticking, yeah, I would take it. But I'd also want to shop it around because there's just like you were mentioning, you got the Giants, great farm system. The Rangers, great farm system. The Tigers even. Their farm system isn't that good, but you know there's several teams out there that are going to want starting pitching, and whenever that happens, it builds up one of those bidding wars, you know. And I just can't see the Angels putting together the best deal for that. But you bring up an extra interesting point if they want to talk about getting rid of some of their major league offensive talent because they just have so much of it, you know. Mark Trumbo, Pujols, Hamilton, Trout. I mean, those guys aren't going anywhere. So if you talk about any other secondary players such as Peter Bourgeois, then, you know, it's a possibility. I mean, I wouldn't say no to it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Richard. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say I agree with Brian there. I think it boiled down to a bidding war, and I'm not 100% sure on who else is in the minor league system. I know the Angels have a pretty bad system. So I think I don't think they'd be able to put together a type of deal that maybe say Texas or even Baltimore might be able to put together. So you never know. But I think
that's true.
I think as far as Anaheim's going, I think they're in the situation that we were a few years ago where they tried to buy a World Series title and they just fell flat on their face.
And I used Anaheim as an example, but I agree. I mean, Anaheim is you know, they're not in a good spot right now with their minor leagues. But as an example, I think there's going to be a bidding war for Bud Norris, not because he's great, but because who else is out there? I think MLBTradeRumors.com had an article that said there's really no quality starting pitching available. Matt Garza, I guess, would be the best, but the Cubs are going to want a nice return for him. Bud Norris, like I said earlier, I think he's going to be the best starter on the market that's the most affordable and cost-effective.
Well, plus, Matt Garza hasn't even pitched yet this season. So, I mean, like, he's still been hurt. He's supposed to be coming back in the next couple of weeks, but that's going to be June. So he's going to miss the first 2 months of the season. But, you know, the fact that there aren't a lot of starting pitchers available, if you get a couple of good ones that are at the top levels of the minor league system or major league ready in return, there's a good possibility we ship off Norris and Lucas Harrell just because those two may be the best two available on the market. And, I mean, let's be honest, neither one of them are going to be in our long-term plans. Harrell, you would think he would be, but no one really realizes that he's 28. He'll be 29 next year, so he's not exactly going to be one of the young guys. I mean, they could always keep him around.
Huh? He'll be cheap, but that's it.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, he'll you could keep him around because he'll be cheap, but even the fact that he's cheap helps us in our side because that's just another thing that you have to sell to him whenever you're trying to trade him as well. He's under contract, arbitration eligible. He's going to be very cheap. He's not even going to be making $1 million for, I think, another 2 years, something like that. So, I mean, that's another good thing right there. But the two teams I mentioned earlier, I did mention the Rangers, but I shouldn't have mentioned them because I don't see the Rangers or the Cardinals. Those are two teams that have been linked to us in the past. I don't see either one of them making a play for either of our guys, only because those two have the best farm systems in baseball, and they have pitching readily available at the tops of their minor league system. I don't see the point in trading whenever you have guys that are possibly better just right there. Like the Cardinals have already been using it this year, you know, but the Rangers, I just don't, and they're leading the league in ERA right now. So I don't see either one of them doing it. I could see Boston possibly doing it. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting. Little trade market popping up in the next few months. The Astros should be active. That's for sure. It's just who. It could be a number of different people.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of variables that you have to take into account that we obviously can't see. So I think it will be certainly a wonderful ride once we get there. As we start to hit our limit, guys, is there any last things you want to say before we wrap this thing up?
Jed Lowry got hurt again tonight.
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. I mean, did we honestly expect anything else to happen? Jed Lowry's glass man practically. So I, as much as I like the guy and for what he did last year, I think it's he was almost not unreliable, but he was a liability as far as health was concerned. So I'm glad we were able to get rid of him.
Yeah. Yep. One of my best friends met him last year, and he was very polite, very nice. I mean, I'm sure he's a really nice guy, but he is, like Richard said, just the glass man. It's like the movie Unbreakable. You know, he's Samuel L. Jackson. He's constantly getting hurt. So, I mean, I wish the best for him, but I just, you know, going back to what Alex was saying about not being surprised, I mean, we're just – it's not surprising.
Yeah, he was a liability, and he had health issues to start. So, guys, I want to thank you all for coming on today. It's certainly going to be fun having you guys on the Stros Bros. For our new listeners, you can find Brian and Alex at Lex the Plex and Beham. I'm not too sure, what is it, 1129?
Beham 2421.
2421, okay. I don't know why 1129 came to mind, but 2421 and at me at Yoko Rick. And you can reach all of us at the Stros Bros on Twitter. As always, check the site. We've always got a lot of stuff going up on there. And if you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes. You can find us there. Leave us a comment, a nice little rating, whatever. Guys, any last words, closing statements?
Dwight Howard's a rocket.
Well, all right, guys. So we will see you guys next time. Thank you all for listening to the Stros Bros, and we will see you all next time.
Peace.